So welcome to our monthly teleconference for our program, where we support new and novice teachers become the best teachers they can be and they want to be in the first 3 years of teaching. So today we're going to have a slightly different format. Instead of working straight with teacher questions, we're going to work with Kyle Radford, who is a well-renowned teacher, mentor, and program director for Mentoring in Action. So, Kyle, welcome to our call today.
Thank you, Dolores. I'm very happy to be here on this call with all of you this evening, and thank you for inviting me.
And so today we're going to talk about the resource that you mentioned in your book, The First Year Matters, which is the book we use in this program. And I'm referring to page 7, where you talk about your board of mentors. What were you thinking? What was your strategy behind this aligning, if you want, board of directors to support teachers in their first few years of teaching?
Well, originally, this idea came to me when I was sitting in a workshop as a director of a mentoring program. And the leader of the workshop was talking about boards of directors and advisors and how we all as program directors need to reach out and create teams. And as I was sitting there, I drew this picture that you will see on page 7. Those of you who are listening, you can open your book to page 7 and you'll see like a round table with seats around it. And I envisioned this board of mentors for novice teachers because as I was listening to the mentors, they felt that they couldn't meet every new teacher's need. Mm-hmm. And what occurred to me as I was sitting in an audience and I wanted to share with others is that the mentor doesn't have to do it alone if we empower the novice teacher to reflect on all the types of people in his or her life that can influence their teaching or being the best teacher, the best human mm-hmm. being that they can be. So the idea, that's how the idea came about, and I've transferred it or integrated into the mentoring program and especially into the novice teacher's book.
Mm-hmm. And this aligns with the work, you know, as a coach that I'm working in this program with you on supporting these teachers. It's this combination that we've talked about so many times about self-responsibility, about mentoring is not something that someone does to you, but that does for you in the sense that this is something that we have created. Mentoring and support is something that we offer novice teachers, but then ultimately it's for the novice teachers to embrace and also lead in their search of best version of themselves. So I love what you said because it is true, you know, no mentor can provide all the solutions to a teacher. And also, it takes more than just a whole community to support a new teacher because like anybody trying to succeed in any profession, it takes part of, it's a role where not only the other colleagues and supervisors are involved, but everybody that is in the life of that teacher, right? Their families and their community, and if they have children, you know, the child care. And so it's important in this page 7 to fill out this board of mentors. I mean, stress the word mentor, but it's, you know, more than just mentor support. So some of them will be mentors and people that are ahead of them in their career and they look up to, kind of those, you know, teachers that they look up and say, that's the kind of teacher I want to grow up into, kind of thing. But then there's all these other people that are key to them succeeding in their job.
Yes.
And yes. And one of the things I want to say as we explore this from this different perspective, right, that from the from the perspective of the teacher leading their own mentoring program. This having this mentoring go from the inside out, you know, not only the teacher embraces it, but also they design it. And so you said here in this page, it talks about seating yourself at the head of the table. Because basically these teachers, or we, are the chairman or chairwomen of our own personal board of support, board of mentors, board of directors. And we've talked about this in the past, and there's a video that the teachers will be receiving in the next few weeks about what does it mean to lead oneself? Because ultimately, none of us can succeed unless we first have a clear understanding and connection with our own internal leader.
I think that's really an important point, especially today in our schools where many novice teachers are struggling and they are giving up before they even complete their first year and are discouraged. To turn inward and revisit their own personal goals about why they chose to be a teacher and to rely somewhat on their intuition and their inner leadership mm-hmm. is an important part of this board of mentors. So can you say a little bit more about that inner leader?
Yeah.
I know we're going to see you talk about it on the video that we will send out next Monday, but it would be nice to have you expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, so when I talk about internal leadership, I talk about that force or that being, you know, there's many ways of calling it. I sometimes call it my captain, right? My highest voice. And it's that voice that we all have. Some of us have it more buried than others, but it's that voice inside of us that always knows the answer, that always knows that in the end everything will be okay. It's the voice that has full access to our intuition, to our power, to what we know is true, to our beliefs. And when we rely on that voice, we're almost, you know, unstoppable. Because what happens is we have tapped into the source of our being. While it is hard to always be in that space, the more you connect with that inner voice, and then go and, you know, seek your mentor, seek your support, seek your solutions from that place of being, then all the things, and we've talked about this at length in previous jobs and works we've done together, Carol, is that, and you've experienced it for yourself, how life becomes easier when you are standing next to your inner leader or on your inner leader's shoe.
Yes, and I think that what it does and what you talk about in that video that people will see next week is it slows us down a bit so that we can actually be quiet and listen. And I think in the busy life of a teacher, when I work with novice teachers and mentors, it's just always so hectic and people are stressed and it's overwhelming. And the dailiness of a teacher, what they say to me is, I can't slow down for a minute because I have these students in front of me and I have an administrator asking for this and then I have bus duty and I have this and I have my own family. Mm-hmm. And even teachers talking about it, they get stressed out, just lifting everything. So the inner leader or finding that place within ourselves that you will have us think about a little bit more, allows us to just stop and take a breath. In doing so, we get reconnected to our passion, which is teaching. And mm-hmm. I believe that the novice teachers that leave too quickly and make that decision are leaving it in a panic mode when they're very stressed out and haven't created a board of mentors, they only see one person at the school helping them instead of relying on their own intuition too. So I'm encouraging all the people listening to this audio interview to not give up too early. And in January, it's a chance to look back at the fall and then look ahead to the spring and maybe integrate some of these ideas from the beginning of the book, page 7, that maybe didn't have time to do in the beginning of the year. And that's why we're reintroducing it tonight in January.
Mm-hmm. And so there is a video that's coming up, and it's a visualization that I lead teachers through a very guided visualization where they actually get to meet their inner leader. It only takes a minute or two. It's fairly quick. But what my experience as a coach is that once people actually meet in their minds or imagine, they can actually connect in an off-sense level with their inner leader, then it becomes an exercise of tapping into someone that they've already given them a name and has a face.
Yeah.
And one of the strategies I use a lot for myself and with my clients is, you know, the 1, 2, 3 breathe. And it's, you know, at any point in our lives, and it could be in the classroom, it could be driving, it could be at any point in the day, is check with yourself, you know, it's silence yourself before you respond. And it takes as much time as it takes to take a breath, taking a breath, 1, 2, 3, then you respond. What it does is the reactive response is usually not the one we would design and not the one we would want to blurt out. And many times we can regret it. So the taking the breath allows us to align ourselves with again, you know, what we, in this program, one of the things we talk about a lot is our best version of ourselves, right? Our best version of our teachers. So the 1, 2, 3 breathe helps us, you know, take one pause to answer, react from that place of best version. You mentioned the month of January, and I want to invite our listeners tonight to go to that chapter, the chapter of month of January, which is what we're going to focus this call on. And, you know, I love the title that you gave, the month of January. And I know this book is organized by months, but as you've said in the past, you know, this is a book of tools. They're organized in the way that they present it, but feel free to jump around. And, you know, when we talk about January, the title is Looking Back and Moving Forward. Whether you do this in January or you do it in October or you do it in April, it doesn't really matter when this happens. But there's always this, you know, looking back to move forward action where we, in some ways, we replenish ourselves with what happened to design what's coming up. And, you know, here I want to make an observation, because the truth is nothing is more important than the present moment. The past and the future, they don't exist. The only thing we have is the moment where we are operating, you know, in that time. The richness of, you know, looking back and moving forward is about the learning that we have from looking back and the design that we have the choice and the opportunity to make for moving forward. But the action, the change, actually happens in the present moment. When we think about looking back, I love thinking about it from a grateful state of mind versus a regretful state of mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's important. Say a little bit more about that. How do you do that if you made mistakes in the fall and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that
again? There's a couple of things. First of all, it all starts with the state of mind. And we talked about this in the live presentation that we did earlier in the year about where are you standing? Are you in the place of victor, lack, or are you in the place of, victor, abundance, or are you in the place of victim and lack? So, you know, if you remember when we did that exercise, whenever you're in a place of victim, things happen to you, right?
Yeah.
Why was I given this class that is so hard? Why
right.
was I given this room that is so gloomy? Why, you know, why to me? When we're studying the place of victory and abundance, then it's all, everything is an opportunity for learning. So why do I have to, why did I get this class that is so hard? Why was this class given for me, for my growth, for my learning, right?
Yes.
So when you look back from a place of gratefulness, you celebrate everything, including the mistakes, because you know what? There is no one out there, and you know, you worked many years in the education industry. I've worked most of my life in the entrepreneurial space where people start businesses. But either way, if you really look and study the people that made it to the top, those are the ones that probably made the most mistakes, but they learn from them. Because
yes.
every single thing we didn't do right is an opportunity to do it better next time. But
so
the only
what I'm
way
hearing,
we, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say it's okay that new teachers make mistakes and mentors make mistakes and we all make mistakes if we can see, understand how we can move forward from those and have
yeah.
that board of mentors helping us. So those two parts do connect.
Yes, and I want to make a distinction here, not a distinction, but an observation, that pool of mentors also include your students.
Ah, yeah. Say more about that. Go ahead.
More. Because as we talk about looking back to move forward, you know, and this month of January, this is something that is very useful for the teachers, but the teacher is one more participant in an experience of a classroom. And the same way we've talked about coaching and mentoring and how mentoring through the years has become a more equal partner kind of relationship where nobody knows more than the other, simply one is more advanced and is guiding
mm-hmm.
the other. But the way that it's set up allows for cross-conversation.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that kind of mentoring and you translate it into the classroom, think about the opportunity of a teacher to make a mistake in front of the students and say out loud, I just made a mistake. And process that mistake in front of the students. Of course, we're talking about things that, depending on the level of students, the age of the students, it might be appropriate, right? You know, keeping within the context of the classroom. But there's now, I don't think there's a better lesson a teacher can teach a student than the capacity of making mistakes and using those mistakes in the learning process.
Yes, I think that's really important. And beginning teachers tend to want to not publicly make a mistake, but I think it allows students to see their teacher as human. And the teacher can then say, well, let's look at this together, or I don't really know the answer to that question.
Exactly.
That was a good question.
Exactly.
Together, you can help me to find that information out. So it creates a classroom of excitement and curiosity instead of the teacher just directing all the time. So I love that students are the teacher's greatest teacher, really.
Yeah, exactly.
The client at the end, they see that teaching. They assess the teacher by the way they behave in that classroom. And we know classroom management and behavior management is a huge issue for beginning teachers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess then the board of mentors, I would suggest that the novice teachers put the most difficult, challenging student sitting in one of those chairs on page 7.
Yes, exactly. and the other side of the coin, if you want, of you know, working through mistakes with the students is that not only humanizes the teacher, but it gives the student the permission to make mistakes and challenge themselves. Because ultimately, if you're not making a mistake,
yes,
that means you're not challenging yourself enough. Because the more we stay in within our comfort zone, then we're not learning.
Yeah.
I always say, as a coach, when I'm working, especially when I'm working one-on-one with a client, is that my priority is to work to the best of my capacity, even if it triggers that I make mistakes. Even if it means that I have to say I'm sorry.
Yes. So that's teaching an important social skill and creating a classroom of respect.
And collaboration and shared learning.
Yes, and shared learning, exactly. I'd like to just as an aside make an announcement to all the listeners that for the Springfield teachers, we actually created a student perspective survey, and that survey and the videos that relate to the student survey are available by emailing me at mentoringinaction@gmail.com. The emails are on the mentoringinaction.com website now for any of the listeners, and you will see Springfield Public School teachers highlighting conversations, modeling conversations, looking at data from students who have given it anonymously to their first-year teacher, their beginning teacher. And this student perspective information turns out to be the most powerful feedback that the teacher gets to change his or her practice. So
I would suggest why don't we do this? When we send we're going to send an email with this recording in the next week or so. Why don't we just let's check it out right now and make sure that we add that file to that email.
I like that. Yes, we can add the student survey file, and the videos are all posted now. If you go to the website, you can see
perfect
them under Novice Teacher, and they'll say student surveys. So
perfect.
I'm glad we had a chance to add students to the Board of Mentors.
The board, yeah.
That
yeah
was very important. I want to get back to the January chapter. And for everyone listening, if you could turn to page 141, you'll see a list of the activities that I suggested be discussed in January. Now, as a reminder, this book is a conversational book. It's a book where you complete a reflection on an action page and then maybe unpack it or debrief with someone on your board of mentors, or you do it by yourself as a reflective activity, or you share it with your assigned coach or mentor from the district. But as you take a look at the actions, they take you from looking back and moving forward and back to your beliefs and your values. Dolores talked about values at our opening session, but if you look at 146, you'll see what do I believe. And could you just remind all of us, Dolores, about the importance of our beliefs and values in moving us forward?
Yes, because I think as we were talking about the Board of Mentors and leadership, you know, one of the things that we honor our own leader and our own self is by honoring our values. And our values, you know, most of us share values, but then each one of us has some unique values that make us who we are. For example, with the years I had forgotten, but I was reminded lately that I have a strong value of adventure. And in my daily life with my family, you know, I'm juggling just like we all are. I forgot about it. And my life in itself is an adventure, but I stopped looking at it that way. So when I was reminded of that value of mine, I began purposely shifting my attention, shifting my focus on how I faced my different parts of my life and looking for that place where I could be adventurous. And for me, you know, at this stage of my life, adventures might just be, you know, trying a new flavor of coffee. Or it doesn't have to be big, or trying, you know, new restaurants, or challenging myself here or there in my work. So finding what we are made of, honestly, and making a conscious effort of value, of honoring those, will bring ourselves just to a new level. And in the case of teachers and in the classroom, is reconnecting. When you reconnect with yourself, you reconnect also with your sense of self and your belief system, and that, you know, intrinsically connects with the reason, as you were saying earlier, Carol, the reason why you became a teacher in the first place. So when that happens, then the details or the small situations that are going on tend to take a back, you know, they're not so important anymore, because when you compare it to the bigger vision for yourself as a teacher, then, you know, an issue with a parent or a lack of time, yes, it still bothers you, but it's nothing compared to what you're actually trying to do with your life and in the world.
That's great. Well said. For those that are listening, when you look at page 146, this is an activity that I have done with hundreds, maybe even thousands of teachers, called What Do I Believe? And I encourage all the listeners, the mentors too, to complete this and write their responses in the book. But you'll see that the first question simply says, list three words that describe you as a teacher. And when I've asked people in the past, they're very thoughtful, and the words often relate to what they value. Sometimes people say, well, I describe myself as fair, or I describe myself as organized. They're the words that you use to describe yourself. But when you see question two, and I encourage people to do this, this one says, what three words would your students use to describe you? And often when teachers that I'm doing this process with come to that second question, there's a groan in the room, and they're like, oh my goodness, the students see me this way and I see myself this way. Or sometimes there's some agreement that I think the students see me the same way. But that there is this other lens, because we are working with human beings, and we want to revisit our values and our beliefs and the descriptions from our intuitive self, but we have to be mindful that other people may be observing us and seeing us different, even the principal or the ILS coach who comes in to observe, and you have a meeting after, and they say they see this, and you're like, oh, that doesn't look anything like what I was trying to do. So part of being reflective in the January chapter is being open, and being open to feedback, and being open to changing practices that don't work. So, Laura, can you just say a little bit about what it means to be open to receive from mentor guides, or even from our own intuitive self? How do we hear this if we don't want to hear something?
Well, let me just, this is basically what I, you know, usually when we don't want to hear something, when we're trying to shut down feedback, whether it's from ourselves or from outside, there's usually a fear laying underneath, like that, an undercurrent of fear. You know, fear of I'm not enough, fear of what others must think, fear of being judged. You know, there's all kinds of fears. And let me tell you a little bit of what a fear means. I love this analogy. A snowflake, it's really a particle of dust, a minuscule particle of dust that we can't even see with our naked eye. That when it comes through the atmosphere and it gets it crystallizes, and as it comes down, it collects moist and it becomes a snowflake. So, and as it, you know, falls on the ground, it could become a snowball. It could even become an avalanche, right? But the core of this original snowflake is really a very, very small particle of dust. What I'm trying to say is this fear or this, you know, negative talk or this, you know, not wanting to face what bothers us, it usually is born from a very tiny, tiny truth that a saboteur takes and blows it up out of proportion to the point that it sometimes paralyzes us. We've all experienced moments where we talk ourselves into such an anxious state that we can no longer think clearly, right?
Yeah.
And so when we allow that to happen, we can no longer take any feedback from outside. But when we're able to acknowledge, you know, this kind of reaction, it's usually like, you know, like night dreams when we were kids, and we would imagine all these monsters, but the moment, you know, one of our parents would turn on the light in the room, those monsters will go away because the light will make us realize that we were safe in our beds in our rooms, right?
Right.
So this fears or this, you know, this you know, reluctancy to see anything that can bother us usually disappears when we acknowledge it. And, you know, you might be in a meeting with a mentor, and the mentor, you know, is telling you some feedback and something you might not want to hear. And it's okay to say, this is for both for mentors and mentees. If you're a mentor and you realize that the body language of the person you're talking to changes, or the voice or the tone, you know, it's okay to say, is this bringing fear? What is your emotion behind this? Or if you are the one receiving the feedback and you are experiencing the emotion, it's okay to either say it out loud or recognize in yourself that what is the emotion associated with this? What this does, Carol, is that it brings words to an emotional current inside of us. And when that happens, the emotion tends to diminish and we're able to process it. And so in that way, once we have acknowledge and kind of said to the emotion, I see you're there, but I'm okay, I'm strong enough, I want to receive this feedback so I can be a better teacher, then once we deal with that emotion, then we can start receiving the feedback and taking that feedback and putting it into action.
I think that's a really important approach, because even though we create a board of mentors, I know that many novice teachers have said to me, my favorite teacher was the person who was the hardest on me in high school.
Yeah, well, because
the most difficult teacher who guided me and pushed me to the edge so I could be the best that I could
exactly.
be. So often the people we put on our board of mentors, or the mentors that we have conversations with about these exercises in the First Year Matter book, may not always just be agreeing with us, but pushing us to another level. So I'm glad to hear you explain that a little bit, that it is an emotional journey. It can be.
I mean, life is an emotional journey. But it's, you know, it's not just teachers. We all experience it. I mean, look at an athlete, you know, or when you're trying to, you know, get fit and you go to a class, you know, and you're doing a cardio exercise, you're not loving that, you know, teacher at that moment when you're sweating and everything hurts. There is not really love coming out of you. You're like, when is this going to be done, right?
Right, but, feel the pain.
you feel the pain. But you still stick with it because you're looking for that result. You're looking to feel better or, you know, or lose weight or whatever is that your outcome. In the case of the teacher, it's this realization that feedback is in service of you. And let's remind ourselves of, you know, nobody will take the time to give you feedback if they didn't care about you.
That's true. That's true. So that's the general.
Anybody that
mentoring.
Takes
yes.
their time and, you know, and their breath and, you know, their skills to give you feedback is because they respect you. They want you to be better because they know that you can. And ultimately, they love you. So don't ever forget that it is a way of hugging you. It is a way of saying, you are so good at what you do, and I know you can be better, and here's how.
And having the novice teachers be open to that is
from that
so
place,
important. And that, as we wind down, I just want to say in the January chapter and throughout the whole book, these are opportunities to reflect and refine the practice. They're not busy work activities. And I liked what you said. All of this is in service of you. It's in service mm-hmm. of novice teachers to provide that support that they need to be successful. So I appreciate all the listeners wanting to take it on and to expand their practice and get some new ideas from this conversation. And I encourage everyone to create their board of mentors and to review the January chapter and find some new strategies that will bring mm-hmm. joy to the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, and you just said month of January chapter and board of mentors. If you take away one thing from this call, I would like you to write it down in your journal or in your notebook. And it's what from this call that you just spent time listening to, what of all that we said today, will it serve you and your students in the classroom? Just one thing. And then how will that thing that you took away, can that be put in place into your daily work?
Oh, that's a great suggestion, Dolores, because we had such a wonderful conversation. I have one announcement for the listeners. We have a new ebook that mm-hmm. is posted on the mentoringinaction.com website.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For Springfield teachers, we have your own tab. It says Springfield. So you can click on Springfield, and you can see the archives of all of these conversations. And you can click on books, and you will see the new ebook for the First Year Matters, and it will really help all of you, the mentors and novice teachers, to use this tool most effectively. So thank
Perfect.
You, Dolores.
I will suggest that we will also add the ebook to our next year.
All right. That sounds like
so
a that great.
They have it all there as well.
All right.
So have a great night. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sorry we didn't take questions today, but we really wanted to go deeper into this, whole conversation of Board of Mentors and what it meant. I look forward to your comments and your suggestions in our Facebook group. And most important, I look forward to witnessing the learning that happens between teachers as they explore different topics in the Facebook group. So, Carol, good night. I look forward to our next conversation in about 4 weeks. And in the meantime, I'll see you on Facebook.
Thank you, Dolores.
Perfect. We will see everybody soon.